journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today.
I'm here.
Of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge.
How's my volume level?
Perfect. Okay, great.
Welcome. As if I haven't been away for so long. I was 2 minutes away on the other side, on the other station. So welcome to Studio B, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, revolutionradio.co, but not com, Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Haggy Shack Radio. Thank you everybody for tuning in. Tonight I have my old and dear friend Tolek in the virtual studio here in virtual cyberspace. So, somewhere in the fourth dimension. Hey, do you remember a few years ago you said, we're all going to move? Yeah, we are in the fourth dimension. Definitely, we are in the fourth dimension. People won't notice it, but I can certainly say that we're in the fourth dimension because the things that you're thinking are manifesting, and that's fourth dimension, isn't it?
In a way.
You know?
In a way.
So, yeah, welcome, Tolek. How are you, mate?
I'm great. I'm great. And thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Always. Always. My good friend, lifetime Andromeda Galaxy contact person, Mark Kimmel, uses the terminology that you're using regarding fourth dimension. When he speaks of fourth dimension, he's speaking of consciousness. And I definitely think that what we're seeing today is a migration away from what Mark would call three-dimensional, fear-based, anger-based, confusion-based, three-dimensional thinking, moving toward fourth-dimensional, thinking, expression, thought, feelings, emotions. Because the vibration of the fourth dimension in terms of consciousness is the vibration of love, literally. Now I'll talk about the way I describe what I've been taught about the fourth dimension in terms of a density, maybe, but I'll stick with the term dimension because the way that I've been taught this topic, we are here in the third, and in the third, we have organic bodies, which are comprised of blood, muscle, sinew, bone, tissue, organs, heart, lung, brain, etc. The land is comprised of dirt, mountains, streams, water you can touch. This vibration is slow and is dense. Based on everything that I've been told, when you leave this dimension, this 3D, if you will, perceptibly solid dimension, and you travel into the fourth, or travel to the fourth, or migrate into the fourth, the first thing that I've learned is that as a 3D organic being, you cannot travel through time. I know I've shifted gears a little, but you can't travel through time as a 3D being. Somebody, somehow, with some technology, has to take your 3D organic form and bump it up one vibratory level to at minimum 4D and or higher. And then you can travel anywhere you want to, within the context of what we call time, any time that you want to, because in the higher dimensions from 4D and up, which I'll describe at some length, time doesn't exist. Think of anyone's life in the higher dimensions, 4D, 5D, 6D. Instead of walking down a plank, and maybe looking at a ruler, what we would call a yardstick, and see inches, 1 feet, 2 feet, 3 feet, and more, parenthetically representing a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, or an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. The best visual metaphor I can give people for a visual expression of the fourth dimension is think of yourself being in a pool of water. And they're just a number of events. They're not linear at all. You have an event here, an event here, you do something there, you do something here, you do something there. They're just events within the context of a dimension. And you can go to any place in any given moment. And time has no hold on humans, or anybody else for that matter. So for the sake of my definition of 4D or 5D and higher, fourth dimensional existence begins when people and other humanoids and other beings have fine essence matter, what you could easily call spirit matter, which is fine essence. It's crystalline based. To our eyes, it would be translucent. You may see a form, but there's no organic body. There's no blood, bones, muscles, tissues. You would see a human or a humanoid in whatever shape he or she chose to show you. But that human is made of crystalline fine essence matter. And for the most part, 4D people, 5D people can live on energy. They can just as easily live on energy as ingesting a higher dimensional liquid with some proteins and vitamins in it. So not from the perspective of consciousness, but from the perspective of physicality, 4D on up is very, very different than 3D. At least based on what I've been taught in the past 5 years.
Okay, so now, and you've also related a story that one day you were given a pill of some kind that allowed you, as you say, to go backwards and forwards. Did they give you another pill to drop you back in? And what have you learned since then, what that pill is? I mean, or are you still in that state, or does it wear off? Is it, you know, got a certain limit, or is there a trigger that can switch it back off again? Is it nanotechnology? Have you got any idea of any of the answers to those questions?
All good questions. What I remember seeing, what I remember experiencing was what we in contemporary society today would call like a NyQuil gel cap. You know, if you took your right hand and placed it around the tip of your pinky finger, that's kind of about how big it would be. You know, like a NyQuil gel cap, the shape of a cap lid. It was blue-green in color, and he said, if you know, take this, and it will allow us to migrate your current 3D organic vibratory rate into that of being a fourth dimensional person. And at that time, he was mid to higher level 4D. And I said, oh, okay, fine, but why? He said, well, because you cannot travel. We're taking a time travel trip. You cannot travel through time as a 3D organic person. I went, oh, okay, good explanation. Took the pill. Now, honestly, there may have been some other event that took place within the context of me being in his ship, something that he may have done to adjust my vibratory rate before we left Earth space. I was in an interview recently and somebody asked, well, what was it like, you know, when you were leaving the planet? I said, well, I felt a little bit of movement leaving the planet's surface and I could see Earth, you know, quickly descending below us. But after that, I have no sense of movement at all. Once we got outside of Earth space, we went through what people would call a jump gate, you know, or a Stargate or an Einstein-Rosen bridge, any one of those, wormhole, because that's what they do. The higher dimensional people, at least that I'm aware of, they fold space. In order to get from point A to point B, they fold space and they go, okay, they jump in a hole, come popping out the other end. I think the whole trip lasted, based on what I remember, in terms of travel leaving Earth space 5 to 7 minutes when we arrived. That's my sense of it. To when we arrived in Western Virginia or Kentucky in the late 1840s.
All right. So
I did it 3 times in a week and a half, and certainly the pill existed, and there may have also been another event that was used in concert with the pill to adjust my vibratory rate so I became a crystalline being. And I'm going to anticipate your question. I did have to take a pill to come back into re-entered Earth space on the return trip back from the first trip and the second trip and the third. The first and second trips, both times I took a very different color pill. Don't remember at this moment in time what it was, but yes, I had to go through a process of recompiling this body so it would become 3D organic again. And at the tail end of the third trip, while we were still in 1840-something Earth space, and we had watched the events of that day, the fire burning, the barn, the loss of the animals, the loss of this father's young daughter of 3 or 4 years old. He said, I'm going to give you a choice. You can stay in spirit form if you'd like to, in this current 4D form that you're in. You can stay in this form and become a guide for this family. And you can do other things while you're here, but your mission would be to be a guide for this family. Or you can take the pill I've been giving you typically each time back and go, you know, go back to Earth and continue your life. And I guess I chose to come back to Earth because I'm still here.
So you literally had a blue pill moment. It's not exactly the same, because here you are, you're still doing your job for the Andromedan Council. You're still, right. You know, there's still life in you. You're not just a kind of...
On this body.
Yeah.
I'm blessed, because yeah. This is a good body.
Yeah.
It's got a relatively fast metabolism. It doesn't break down hard. I mean, it's kind of like the Energizer rabbit. It's a good body, so... Yeah, I'm here doing I honestly don't remember why I decided to come back to, at that time, present day Earth was the late summer of 1993.
Because you knew you were going to come on journeys with JP, that's why.
Yeah, could be, yes.
You know, there's always a reason for things.
And at that time, quite honestly, I had no idea of my future Tolek role, my Tolek designation, Tolek work. This is 1993. And remember, I only became aware of those three trips back in time to the 1840s in the September of 2010, when this same gentleman who I learned was it's the commander for the Primary Andromedan Council Biosphere. I learned that's his role. I didn't know who he was back in 93. I didn't know I was going to be doing this work that started in September of 2010. I had no idea.
So basically they kind of put you to sleep.
Yes.
And then woke you up. All right. So.
Yeah,
let's ask him. I've got loads of questions. Of course.
Yeah, and we've never quite had a conversation like this.
Yeah, yeah. I want to drill down, because like I'm starting to find out bits about my other self. You know, the rest of me. Right. And it's fascinating. Hang on, it's. Oh, you can't hear it. Huh. Never mind. I'm getting into the fractality of the megaverse.
Yes. Well, actually, that's a really good word, because what I've learned, and I use, as people have heard me speak, I use different metaphors. And essentially, and this is a really good one to use, the fractal example. And everybody gets a kick out of this one, so I'll just go ahead and talk about it. Imagine your, to use an expression, your oversoul, the totality of the soul, of the spirit essence that was created. And we'll, for the sake of clarity and ease of understanding for people, we'll call that oversoul JP,
yeah,
the oversoul.
I call that monad. My friend okay. Walter calls it super JP.
There you guess. Yeah, that's why I said oversoul. Yeah, yeah. So super JP. And let's say that super JP is one of, as a visual example, is a 24-piece extra large pizza. An extra large pizza typically has many, many slices bigger than a large. So we, for the sake of this conversation, we'll call it 24 pieces. Well, there's about a slice to a slice and a third, maybe, at best, that animates that little human body you have. Same thing with me and everybody else. It takes only a teeny little slice of JP oversoul pizza to animate your human body. And even at that, that slice and a third or so, maybe slice and a half, is still far bigger than this human body that you avatar with. It's huge. It's probably, you know, 7.5, 8, 10 feet tall. Without question.
So
it's much, much bigger than your, so it's stuffed. It's stuffed
into a teeny tiny little space.
Yes. Yes. Human body. Yes.
And we're tiny and cute, aren't we? I mean, in terms of the, like, the rest of the galaxy, we are kind of little teeny tiny things.
Hey, well, yeah, we are. Yeah.
Like a toy poodle. You know, we're kind of toy humanoid things. And
yeah, it seems
I presume that like a ferret, we can be sent into small spaces to go and get things.
Mm. Well, I know that there are a lot of other humanoids that are organic also. And there's all sorts of organic life forms throughout this vibratory space, the 3D organic part of the universe. Hundreds, if not thousands, maybe in the millions, I don't know. But I have a good friend of mine in Tucson. And he's been involved in a project closely working with a woman, and together they've documented, it's in the thousands of terms of races. And she's got sort of like this, it's like she's a movie theater, there's a line going out the door. All these races are going, hey, we're here too, don't forget us, include us in your book. There's just an enormous amount of people out there.
And so she's creating a database?
Yes.
Space race database.
Space race.
Oh man. There's poetry. There's poetry today. There's a lot of poetry. I have to say, you know, I've been coming out with these things and like three rhymes that are all rhymes. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we're really in a shift at the moment.
We are in the transition prior to the shift.
Right, okay. Well, that's...
Different words, same meaning.
Transition, shift. You know, I mean, basically the essence that I got is that... All right, and here's... We've had some questions from the chat room already. You know, the word Brexit is on everybody's lips. And I know you... I mean, you're a kind of... You know the businesses. You know, you're a business kind of guy. So you kind of keep your eye on the business press and stuff like that.
I've traveled the world.
But not only that, have your contacts said anything about this moment and about the idea that Brexit is a kind of catalyst? To me, it seems like the little tangle of the little piece of wool that catches on the nail that untangles the whole thread of all of the things that hold the Western oligarchy together and in domination. So what's your contacts, you know, what's the Tulloch biosphere's opinion on the whole thing?
I have not asked them specifically about this event, but I can tell you that based on what I've learned since January of 2014, when actually, it was kind of like February into March when I started to ask a lot of questions. What I learned back then and through this moment in time is that it is not just the physical changes on this planet that are happening because of the area of space that this solar system and this galaxy is traveling through right now. And it's just recently entered. There are a lot of things cosmically that are happening out in space that are affecting change on this world and of this world. Originally, I thought that the higher dimensional transformation, the higher dimensional shift of this world would be due to and expressed by Earth changes of the planet. That would be the primary marker as to looking at the peak of those events and learning that when the peak of those events happen, the higher dimensional shift of this world and the solar system will take place. That's only, what I've learned since then is that's only partially correct. The total picture is at the highest peak of all of those Earth changes, at the highest peak of possible human consciousness and awareness of who we are as beings, as humans on this planet. And that means the highest level of awareness and also the highest possible numbers of people. Moreover, there'll also be a culmination of events like these of Brexit, you know, the exit of Britain from the UK. There are going to be other events that will come to a crescendo as well. So it's not just cosmic activity affecting the Earth and the, you know, the rising of new islands and the melting of ice caps and all the things and the movement of the magnetic poles. Yes, all of those things, but also a number of activities in humankind on this planet, which reach an apex, a crescendo of the greatest possible knowing as humanity. Why? Because this planet has its own evolutionary blueprint, which is can be expressed by sacred geometry and mathematics. Every planet does. In addition, based on what I've learned so far, it is the first time this planet and others, and I don't know all the reasons, but it's the first time that this planet and others will become higher dimensional life forms through a slow transition and transformational process. And one expression of that is the inner, you know, we have the Earth, the crust, the mantle, the outer core, the inner core. The inner core of the Earth is no longer magma, iron, liquid iron, solid iron. It's blue plasma. It's already a higher dimensional energy source. So there are all these different pieces. It's kind of like how do you build a higher dimensional puzzle with many, many pieces until it's complete? And at the peak and congruence of all of these, that's when the actual higher dimensional shift will happen. There is no when. It's about the confluence and the apex of all of them. I don't know if that expansive answer helps, but that's what I've been taught. So to go back to center to your question, the exit of Britain from the EU is one event in many that will continue to happen as Earth humans become more aware and are able to greater express their sovereignty as sovereign sentient life forms as part of the cosmos. Because we have to understand the solemnness and sacredness of us as humans before we can understand the greater whole. The greater whole, W-H-O-L-E, is too big. It's too expansive. You know, the Dakota call it Wakandanka. That's great mystery. We can't possibly understand great mystery until we calm down, grow up, and stop killing each other, and instead start revering each other. These are the moments that will launch us into becoming higher dimensional beings. Why? Because from the fourth dimension up, that vibration is the totality of the expression of love.
Greater expressions of compassion every day. I can feel it happening. Yeah. You know,
you're right.
Yeah.
There are more people.
More people. And I was with a small group of people today. We went out for a meal in the local New Age community, as you have it. I was telling a story about how I was talking to my chicken one day and how, I realized that in her world, she regards herself as royalty because she's the great giver of life. She layeth the eggs, you know, and they have this whole mystique about, you know, the great hen is, you know, to be honored and revered, and, you know, typical patriarchy is, you know, there's the whole thing with the cockerels and things like that. But essentially, we treat these creatures, we treat chickens like dirt, terrible. And yet they have their own opinion of themselves, that they have a nobility and a divinity. And I think when I explain that to my friends today, rather than any of them giving any kind of ridicule, they all went, oh wow, yeah. Yeah, I never thought of it like that. They were totally open to the compassion of the understanding of that way of thinking.
Yeah, that unique life form is sacred unto itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody's looking out from their own perspective of sacredness. Hmm. Even the bugs and the four legs and the eight legs and the 16 legs and the 30, you know,
millipedes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even these little things that get crushed underfoot, and I'm still having trouble killing midges, little blood sucking vampire bastards. You know, I'm still debating, you know, some of them I say, hello, do you want to come and play? And, you know, somehow that, but I can't raise the feeling right. It's really hard, you know, to be honest.
Mosquitoes?
Yeah.
Yeah, where I am, mosquitoes are plentiful, and it's where I am right now, mosquitoes are plentiful. And, you know, anything, I just, philosophically, me, because I'm an individual on this planet, I have a hard time with parasites. And if it's going to be you or me, bug, it's going to be me, and you're going to die. You know, because if you're going to try to perpetuate your life from sucking my blood, I don't want that to happen. It's not something I want.
Yeah. I have a friend, I have some very interesting friends. They run a flea circus. They actually have a true, they restore automata, you know, Victorian robot machines. And they're a lovely couple. I love them. And, one of their things when they display them, they have an old fashioned flea circus, and they really do have fleas that carry things and, you know, just like really like as you think, you might imagine. And in order, she actually feeds the fleas. She puts a drop, you know, she pricks a finger and puts a drop of blood on the plate and they all feed on it. It's just incredible that they actually feed their fleas like that. But, anyway, you know,
that's kind of neat. Well, it's voluntary, which is nice.
You know,
I don't have any issues with fleas. I just think that.
Ticks. I think midges and
mosquitoes. Like mosquitoes and ticks are predatory and they don't care where they land as long as they get their blood. You know, it's. And they're actually no different than reptilians who go from lower 4D to organic.
Well, exactly. You know, let's go up.
Organic, they want their blood and their fresh meat.
Exactly. So let's go up the fractal because we're talking on fractal levels.
Okay.
So, you know, we've got the blood-sucking vampire insects. And then on a larger scale, we've got the blood-sucking vampire reptilians. There must be, therefore, the next level up of blood-sucking vampire green thing with teeth.
Or wait, before we jump to like 4.1, Mike's for reptilians or 4.2, just keep in mind that there's also blood, you know, it's an expression, but there's also blood sucking pathological, psychological nut job people who take what they want when they want, kill people, it doesn't matter. You know, the earth is their oyster to feed off of it as they wish. And they don't care about anybody else except for themselves. Those people will not last. When the higher dimensional shift of this planet comes, their vibration won't be able to tolerate the higher vibratory rate of this next dimension up.
So, higher vibratory, higher vibratory rate.
Jaguar.
J-A-G-W-I-R-E.
Right. Tomato. Yeah. But you know what? You guys, you've been blowing the word aluminum for years, because there's no I in there. Aluminium. Yeah, but there's no I in there.
It's got Y. Aluminium. Y-U-M.
Right. Right. But if you look at the way it's written.
Yeah, I know.
There's no, I know.
You should try Leicester. Gloucester. Yeah?
Oh, you mean like?
Leicester. It's pronounced Leicester. Oh. Gloucester.
Worcester.
Or Worcester.
Worcester.
Worcester is pronounced Worcester. As in Worcester sauce.
Worcester. Yeah. Gloucester.
Yeah. Gloucester, that's right. I used to live near Gloucester. Actually lived in a place called Cirencester, which was written Cirencester, very luckily. Back in the day when they used to spell things right.
I come from a place that has Stamford, Stratford, Avon, West Haven.
And none of them are in Wiltshire.
That's right.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, Stratford, there's a Stratford in London about, you know, 5 miles from where I grew up as well. So, and I actually live 6 miles right here, from Dallas, Dallas, Scotland, of course, not Dallas, Texas.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
So anyway, meanwhile, so, you know, I'm really interested in the whole Star Nation thing, right? So your people, the Andromeda Council consists of, 12 divisions, or is it 12 races, 12 divisions, 12 concepts? What are the qualities of the 12, and do they relate by any chance to our conceptions of, the qualities of astrology, or our conceptions of the qualities of color, sound, and light?
No, sir.
No.
Nope. No. Nice try.
Oh, interesting. And what about the 12 strands of DNA and the 12 dimensions?
All right. It's much more akin to a deep space United Nations. As a matter of fact, on planet Earth, we know of them as the Andromeda or Andromedan Council. In deep space, they're known as the Galactic Council. And there are 12 senior members, senior star systems with a designated senior home world. And I'll read the star systems pretty quick. Arcturus, Antares, M103, Procyon, Vega, Capella, Polaris, Sirius A, Deneb, Tau Ceti, Alhena, Betelgeuse. Those are the 12 senior, if you will, cabinet members of this deep space United Nations. It is a governance and development body.
Right. So when you say Galactic Council, does that actually cover this whole galaxy, or is it just spiral arm thing?
It's a deep space UN for many other star systems and planets. I just named off the 12 most senior members, and I'll address this topic, which I've never really discussed at length before. Apparently there were we would try and measure time. I don't even know how big the number is.
We'll have the rolling credits going off back into the distance long time ago in a galaxy not very far away from it.
Yes. And the senior council was made of 9 of these star systems, and it was the Arcturian Council. So the Arcturus star system had a council. And there was another similar council, a lot smaller. And they decided that because of alignment of protocols and values and kind of the consistency in the ways that they both did things, that it would be wise to bring the two together into one larger galactic council. I will tell you that the people and the beings that are the members of this greater council, there are a few that are 3D organic, third dimensional, but most of them are 4D through 9D. And the matter of fact, the Arcturian members are at the 9D level, ninth dimension. I have a pretty good sense for what happens through all of the fifth dimension in terms of what 5D people can do and what their technology is like and how they experience life. Above that, realistically, I don't know. I mean, conceptually, I know about it, but I don't really know how they live their lives, other than the fact that they're energy beings. So we have this governmental and development body that functions very much like the UN, and it sets precedence of protocol, how things are done, how first contact is done, how a race can be evaluated before it's contacted openly. And there's quite a few other criteria as well, but suffice it to say there's a number of criteria that must be met before first contact can even be made. And so you have this overseeing development governmental body, and I've said this before, but it's worth saying, that they're like their day-to-day management company, the guys that get things done on a day-to-day basis is the Galactic Federation. And they've got 140 star systems, 300 planets, and a lot of those planets are the junior members of the council, and they sit on a whole bunch of the subcommittees. But functionally, they take care of what are the cooperative protocols for interplanetary trade, barter, exchange, how we want to make sure that those protocols are followed. We want to make sure that people don't, I'm speaking metaphorically, that people don't get burned, they don't get cheated. You know, if somebody has a lot of chili peppers and another planet has a lot of melons, then they want to trade. You know, I mean, there's social interchange, there's cultural interchange, there's educational interchange, there's artistic and music interchange on all of these planetary worlds that are part of this federation of planets. But it's their version of the UN, also called the Andromeda Council, which sort of sets the protocols and sets the governance for all of these cooperating worlds.
So it sounds incredibly bureaucratic. If I may say so.
Yeah.
Like, things don't move very quickly in terms of, like, decisions might be put off for, like, thousands of years. In terms of our time space situation.
Yes. Yes.
Because from where we, you know, time is, could you kind of outline the actual nature of what the problem of the time thing is? Because this is one of the problems, isn't it? The time thing is one of the problems. The AI is one of the problems. You know, the reptilians were one of the problems. They're not so much of a problem anymore because we told them to go away.
Yeah, there's very few of them left.
Yeah.
Even with all of the stories that
Corey
are telling, they're probably, matter of fact, you were here in this conversation. Simon confirmed. He's like, yeah, Tolik, you're right. There are only about 120 pure reptilians and about 60, 65 are you know, blended hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you're the first person that's given that number. And yes, based on everything I know, that's accurate. I'm like, Simon, thank you.
Boom.
But this base that David and Corey are talking about under Antarctica, it's a bad guy's, you know, Illuminati cabal base. And are there some reptilians there?
Yeah.
Yeah, there have been for quite a few years, but it's not a reptilian base. It's the powers that be, the powers that work in the dark and the shadows, the subversive.
It's the Nazis. The underground Nazis. Look, we know that they're under Norway. We know they're under the Antarctic. We know that they're under South Africa. We know that they're well inside the Chilean mountains and all the way down that spine of South America. And they're well established in the Federal Reserve, and they seem to have a pocket universe to themselves. So there is a bit of a problem with the Nazis. But it also
they've
seems...
They've been working with the reptilians for years.
Of course. And the and those pesky Aldebrons, it seems.
Yes.
Don't mention the Aldebrons. I think I got away with... No.
Pickles.
They're very difficult, but they're pesky people. Because, from what I can understand, they're AI infested, aren't they?
Oh, I don't know that. I honestly don't know a lot about AI except for that one experience where this woman, I forget her name honestly, but she was on the internet radio waves claiming that the weekend of July, whatever, 12, 13, 14, you know, when you had the Olympics in London a few years ago, she was claiming that was going to be the moment of the contact because the Palladian High Council told me. And I'm like, mm-mm. And I talked to my guys about it, and they're like, there is no quote-unquote Palladian High Council. It doesn't exist. It's AI. There's an entity on the moon, one of the moons of Mars called Phobos.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a computer there broadcasting, and it can target any number of people.
Mm-hmm.
So they've taken it out since then, but that was simply an AI program was running, and she didn't even know it, had no clue.
Phobos, which indeed means fear, as in phobia.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, yeah.
Phobos and Deimos, and the fear and panic.
There you go.
The two moons of Mars. And of course Phobos, that's no natural thing. That looks like a beaten up old spaceship. So they've probably taken the AI, hacked it, and jammed jammed the transmitter on the end of its, beam array and, are using it to, were using it, as you say, to, mess about with people's heads. There is a vast amount of, psychic and mental freedom that I can feel has been released in the last few days.
Hmm.
Certainly, there was a... I've felt surprisingly happy. In fact, I've been surprisingly happy for the last 5 days, and I'm like, hang on a second, this is not normal. You know, I normally live a life of, like, doom and gloom is the norm, kind of... what's the word?
I mean, just sort of getting by every day?
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's been pretty, it's tough most of the time.
Yeah, day-to-day life.
Day-to-day life is tough. But now, I'm like thinking, oh, how are my friends? And so I just, you know, I just go and think of friends and they call and it's just been fantastic. I mean, really has. It's been really, really, there's been a lot of telepathy going on. And what that means to me, because, I've been doing some of the work of it, is that the ley lines are being cleared on a really grand scale. Probably also rituals have been prevented from happening, which is what keeps them blocked. That's what the satanic rituals, they block the ley lines with the frozen fear that they use, that they extract from that.
And as you know, fear has a vibratory rate and all sorts of things to be done with it.
It's the freezing of it. This is part of the Earth's problem, of humanity's problem, that we all have a kind of, sort of global PTSD, that puts us all into Stockholm syndrome, which is why people are sheeple.
And worse than that.
As if things couldn't get any worse.
I would ask people to wind back to the time of, and I had this conversation with someone else recently, but it bears worth examining. I don't watch commercial news. I don't watch television. I haven't watched television in years. So whatever snippets of news I get, I've gotten from the web over the past few years. But suffice it to say, if we go back to what people call the Columbine event happened in the 1990s here in the States, in the state of Colorado, where a lone gunman killed a number of children in a school. Now, it is tragic that those children and many others have been killed since then. But the point that I'm about to make is this. Much like the recent killing of people in Orlando, Florida, within the past 2 weeks, which struck another big chord of fear, and people were talking about getting rid of the guns and trying to pass new gun laws. What I'm trying to say is this. If instead of people being bombarded by the fear that's generated with each event, what they do is step back, step back, step back, and step back and say, okay, first in the middle, I think it was the middle or early 1990s, there was this event, Columbine. And then there was another a year and a half later. But in the past year alone, I think there have been 12 or 13 of these kinds of events. And what I'm trying to say is each event, to the degree that it happened and to the degree that people were killed, tragic? Absolutely. But instead of focusing on each event, what I would tell people is consider that you step back quite a ways and ask the question, why are these events happening? What is it indicative of? And it's my belief that there are people who have been used, you know, whether you call it a gunman or gunmen, plural, in collaboration. They've been used, they've been programmed, and at some moment in time, they're triggered. And they go execute an event. They go conduct the activities that's necessary to produce a particular event. And what I've observed, just as an observer of these kind of events, is that in the past, like, I don't know, 10 years, the frequency of these events is almost off the charts. And certainly in the past couple of years, we're probably at 12, 13, 40, 14 of these kinds of events. So I would ask people to consider, look at the frequency of these things and look at what it does to the populace every time it happens. And on top of that, every time it happens, they play it in the media over and over and over and over again. And what that does is reinforce the fear, reinforce the fear, reinforce the fear. Because every time they play that stuff over and over again, it reinforces the tragedy and the fear that's generated from that event, which also leads the powers that work in the dark and the shadows to try and exert more and more control. Why else is this happening? Because they're losing their grip. They're losing their control of this planet. And it's these are their last ditch efforts. I'm not even a conspiracy guy, but if you step far enough back and you start putting the pieces together, I think the reasonable person will see this is what's going on. Because the more of these events that are happening, the more people that get pushed, if you will, into a place of fear. And when people are afraid, they easily give up their liberties.
That's it. This is the main issue. And again, it comes back to Phobos, is the if you keep people in a petri dish, what's the word? The medium. It's the thing that's like epigenetics. It's the environment. I think that's the word. The environment of background low level fear. And I've been researching this as well. You know, I've been researching the Nazis quite a lot. You know, I started getting interested in their, you know, the Die Glocke and all these things, and then it kind of spread out from there. There's a distinct possibility that we may be working on a TV series about the Vril Society.
Oh,
with Sean David Morton. He's getting some ideas about that happening. So.
Sean's good.
Don't tell anybody.
He's creative.
Just between you and me, okay?
So, yeah, okay. Sean's very creative.
Indeed, indeed. He's good fun. Yeah. So, yeah, so I've just been, producing him for the last 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah, so I wasn't hanging out for the last 2 hours, just kind of coming in at the last minute. I was actually producing Sean for the last 2 hours as yeah. his, DJ and effects guy. And, you know, I play all the effects and, you know,
fascinating.
All yeah. those things.
I met Sean back in 1994, five. Uh-huh. Long time ago.
Back in the circuit days.
Yes.
Yeah. When people were giving lectures and three people and a dog turned up. In 95, I was in Glastonbury and, David Icke came and I was the third person with my wife and, there was a dog over there just kind of sitting patiently and the fellow outside because he was saying, you know, they're reptiles and he's saying, no, you're saying they're Jews. No, he's saying they're reptiles. No, he's saying they're Jews. He's using a euphemism. No, it's not a euphemism. It's literally, they are reptiles. No, you're saying it's a euphemism, but no, it's not a euphemism. Oh.
I remember this. I was with Roger and June Scherer, Jim Nichols, Bob Dean, Wendell Stevens in the autumn of, it was either 92 or 93. And we all went down into the basement of this building. There were probably 35 of us, maybe, to listen to David Icke speak.
Mm.
And I was like, because David, back then he was telling the story of the building of the pyramid, which resulted in the end result of the reptilians at the top. But the telling of the story was the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission and the Rockefellers and the Morgenthaus and blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, my head hurts. So detail oriented.
That's right. I mean, he goes on for hours and hours. Amazing.
Right. And at that time I went, reptilians eating, come on. That was my reaction in 92 or 93. I had no idea.
You know,
of course.
Yeah.
Now it's a different story.
It's a very different story. You know, back in the day, I was talking to a friend of mine, you know, who I've known for a while. And, back in the day, there used to be this thing. Oh yes, government corruption. Corruption. You know, and we used to think, oh, corruption. Oh, they're taking a bribe. Oh, they're going on a holiday. Holy uh-huh. Lord, were we wrong? Were we so out of the ballpark that we weren't right. even in the same country?
Right.
Holy Lord, nobody could have imagined that. I mean, who could have imagined Jimmy Savile?
Jekyll yeah. Island, 1925.
Jekyll Island.
Bretton Woods.
The Creature from Jekyll Island, that's the name of the book, isn't it?
The World Economic Forum in Davos. Bad. It's the slavery of the human race.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't Davos the guy from Doctor Who, the evil guy who invented the Daleks? That's what, it's Davros. It's Davros. Oh, but, I mean, Davos sounds like Davros. But yeah. Here's the thing, Tolek. So that was perhaps one of the moments where they met their reptilian overlords and they said, okay, you know, it's end game now. You got to step up the game. You got to put all these pieces together that we've been laying down here for thousands of years. And now you're going to start assembling it all. And, we're going to have a completely enslaved, energy producing battery called the human race or something.
Would you like to know the reason for the value of gold? The word, the product gold, G-O-L-D. I heard this recently and I had one of those aha kind of moments.
All right. Then done.
Here we go. The planet, which people are still getting excited about. Now there are a number of, this is a very dynamic area of space the solar system is in right now. And there's a lot of space rock and asteroids and comets and stuff and including other planetoids that are heading our way. I will speak now specifically of the literal planet named Nibiru. I'm going to use a metaphor. If Earth was, say, at the third, it's a metaphor, but if Earth in the solar system was like at the third floor of a building, back in March of 2012, the planet called Nibiru, its little system, flew over to about the ninth floor. It's gone. It's back out in deep space. So whatever's coming, A, it's not Nibiru. B, here's the relevance to the gold story. I knew back in 2012, among my conversations with the guys upstairs, I went, you know, I saw this movie called Cowboys and Aliens, and the reptilians seem to be stealing gold and then melting it down and sucking it up into their ships. And the guys up in the council said, right. So I said, you know, were they using that gold for fuel? And their answer was like, yep, you're catching on. And that segued into the conversation about Nibiru. Now, what I'd learned about Nibiru and how it's able to travel through space is that it creates its own atmosphere and its own energy from gold that it processes and turns into energy. They essentially create their own energetic bubble around the whole planet, and it gives them an atmosphere, and it creates energy, and as long as they have access to gold in whatever form they get it, they can keep creating this perpetual energy shield around the planet. I'm like, oh, so gold is really important because it's a way to create artificial environments, artificial atmospheres. Yeah, that's right. And people do this. People do this all across the cosmos.
Stand by, Toleg. We'll be hanging out somewhere in the cosmos. Come back in a few minutes' time and hear more of this with your host, JP. That's me. I have another guest tonight who is a single name. Not even initials, just one word. And the word is the name of a enormous spaceship, which is known as a biosphere. Mm-hmm. The word is Tolek. What does Tolek mean in the language that it is made from? Who built Tolek? Does she have an avatar? Does she have an artificial intelligence, or is it a natural intelligence? Is it organic intelligence? Is it an organic being? Is it a planet? And, you know, there's a 4 billion questions all about that five letter word, Tolek.
Okay. I don't know what it means. I can tell you when I asked the question, I said, I knew why I had the name. I was given the name so that I could do this work in the public arena, and this is my public life. And using this Tolek name, I could do this work, and that means I get to keep my private life private. Now, interestingly enough, this is consistent with how they do these things. Sorry, let me try this again. What they've done by taking this step is that the action of giving me this name called Tolek is consistent with how they work and live on the different Andromeda Council biospheres. And there are 12 here being in this, in and around the solar system. Right now there's 3 that are protecting Earth space in and around the sun. And there's another 9 that are essentially making up the perimeter and, if you will, an energy and force field fence protecting the whole, protecting our solar system. That's the best way to say it. They have the Andromeda Council, aka the Galactic Council. They have a very definitive role in what is called, the Sphere Alliance. Very major role in what's called the Sphere Alliance.
And how does that relate? The Andromeda Council, and the Galactic?
Their deep space is, deep space name is the Galactic Council.
Galactic Council, right. But how did the Andromeda Council, the Sphere, what they call it, Sphere Alliance? What do they call themselves? They probably have a symbolic name.
Corey Good calls it the Sphere Being Alliance.
Sphere Being Alliance. Let's call it the SBA because it's hard to say Sphere. With a missing tooth like I have. Anyway, so the Sphere Being Alliance is a, they seem to be kind of independent of the Council of the Galactic Council or the Andromeda Council.
It's a cooperative effort to, help protect Earth space and the beings of Earth during this transition time and during this very busy area of space. And it also does two things. The energy field, the energy bubble that protects the solar system keeps whatever remaining, euphemistically, bad guys, reptilians that we're dealing with, the few that are here, they're stuck here. They can't get out. Likewise, it also prevents any more large-scale reptilian ships, any attempts to kind of break into the solar system. They can't get in. It's a cooperative effort between other aligned independent races and the Galactic Council to utilize a number of spheres or biospheres to protect this solar system, this area of space, as we go through this period of transformative change. And as we break away and achieve our freedom and start to figure out our sovereignty. Because as JP, as I'm sure you know, you may inhabit this JP body, but you're likely not from this planet. The pizza slice of your soul that animates your body, you're most likely from another star system. You come from another place. The numbers that I've been given indicate that somewhere between 70 to 75% of the souls living human lives on this planet come from other star systems.
Well, go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and the remaining number, 30% plus or minus, they are people who have been here a long, long time. These are, the original Lemurian folk. And they actually came from another place a long, long time ago when the first proto-humans were being formed. But they've been here, so suffice it to say.
Yeah, they say they recognize me, by the way.
Oh boy, you've been around a long time.
A long, long time. You know that thing a long, long time ago in a place not very far away? What do you know about the... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, to circle back to that, the tail end of my knowledge. So, this movie Cowboys and Aliens happens in 2011, and I'm asking them about what I saw in this movie and how it's relative to Nibiru, and they're like, yeah, you got it. Gold is coveted by the reptilians and other races because they have technology that can take gold, break it down, and transform it so that it can be used to create a perpetual energy source. Interestingly enough, about 3 months ago, I heard somebody else say the same thing, using different words. And I went, aha, confirmation.
I think I'm getting it because,
I don't know, I don't remember.
But, well, we've been using combinations of shungite and silver, colloidal silver. And one of the things they said that what that does is if you combine the two is it kind of puts a foot in the door of the fourth dimension. So there's like a kind of fourth dimensional flow that is...
And the same thing, I understand people who ingest...
Gold.
put it right, put it in water, however you do it, right, monoatomic gold, courtesy of David Hudson, the Phoenix area, Phoenix, Arizona, 1991, 92. I don't know if he's still around. They called it ORMS or ORMAS.
ORMAS, orbitally rearranged mononuclear, elements.
People who've ingested it absolutely notice the manifestation of, let's call them, higher human, higher dimensional capabilities in humans from ingesting this stuff.
Well,
so it looks like there's a definite cause and effect.
Well, you know, it's interesting. A while ago, I bought some gold leaf. You can buy a gold leaf off the internet. It's very, you know, it's used as a cake decoration. You can eat it. So I put a piece, you know, cause it's so fine, you know, you can breathe and it will just float away on your breath. Incredibly fine. You just lay it on a piece of chocolate. It'll stick to the chocolate. And then you can cut the chocolate. You can handle it if you, you know, lay it on chocolate. So you just let that dissolve in your mouth. It's just a fantastic. And you can feel, it's a bit like, you know, when he just dissolve, when Neo dissolves into the Matrix, you can feel the gold dissolve into your body. It's quite an interesting feeling.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds fascinating.
I can feel my Anunnaki build up inside me. No, I'm not. My guide said that I'm part Lyran, part Pleiadian. And, I think the Pleiadian is Pyra of Dakota, of Tegeta. So like neighbors.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Pyra is one of the planets of the Tegeta star system. It's the first or second. There's Vela and Pyra in terms of size being the two largest. Then there's Dakota and then there's Era, ERRA.
Yes, Era. So there's Era,
right.
And there's Pesky.
Let's not go there.
Everywhere has its South Bronx, right? And, you know, it's interesting. So you're Dakotans, right? They all homogeneously, what we'd regard as like what you'd call a Native Indian? Or are they
Native
different?
Native
American Indian.
But
are they, all kind of homogeneous like that, or are they different races on that planet like they have here? Is everybody on one planet all the same in general?
Based on my understanding of what we see, what I've learned about in the physical universe, most of the planets out there have one or two races on a planet. Now there's a place, there's Nicotaritol and a couple of us, that the people there are during some time before the moment of transformation, the higher dimensional shift on this world, there will be people from four aligned Andromeda Council member planets. And I think it's Nicotay. They are a pretty diverse group of people because that original race, they married some people from Dakota and they've married some others. So there's a lot of it. That particular world, Nicote, is much like Earth. But that's not the norm based on everything I've been taught. The norm is one or two races on a world. In a conversation with Wendell Stevens back in the early 1990s, I think it was 94, we're having a cup of coffee on a Saturday, and to make a long story short, I said to him, why all of these people visiting this planet? You know, Wendell, you've written about at least 125 or 126 races, categorized races of people. You've met the Earth people that have had contact. You've written books. You have extensive knowledge. Why are so many people visiting this planet? And he said, his first answer was, I'm not so sure this planet was even supposed to have human life forms on it. It was originally supposed to be a repository of life from across the cosmos. said if you look just at the diversity in insects alone on this planet, now look at the diversity in reptiles, look at the diversity in animals, in fish, and humans on this one planet. He said this is a unique place. It was supposed to be a repository of life. And there are people that come from all across the cosmos to, you know, if they run out of things, they come back and they take some DNA. They take some species because they've run out on their own world. You know, whether it's tomatoes or birds or oranges or grapefruits or cantaloupe, you know, there's just a huge and enormous amount of diversity of life on this planet. That's why it's a special place.
So basically, what's the kind of access? What permission do you need to land on this planet to take, say, all right, all our tomato strains have run out of flavor. We need to get some nice Italian tomatoes. Can we go down to Italy? What would be the, I mean, surely there's gonna be precedents, there's gonna be galactic protocols for doing so, and of course, don't get caught. It's like don't let them see you. What's the deal? Well, you know, how does that work?
Right. I can tell you for the member planets of the Andromeda Council, there's not been any open, overt contact with any groups of people. And there won't be until that period of time of the actual transformation, kind of like just before, and I will probably call it weeks or months, just before, during the time of transformation, and then about 10 to 12 years after, because they're going to hang around and be teachers and mentors and assist Earth people as they attempt to get used to this new style of life, this new form of living. So that's what I know about the people from the Andromeda Council, but that's based on their own protocols of what to do and when to do it. They're very cautious. Other people, they're independent. You know, there are independent planets and star systems out there doing their own thing, and if they feel like they want to come visit, they do. You know, the reptilians had no compunction about coming down here and deciding that, and if you, and I'm sure you've spoken with Alex many times, but if you talk to Alex Collier, he will tell you that the reptilians feel that this was their planet first. And that allegedly they helped to engineer. And if we talk about, you know, way, way back history, the story goes something that like the reptilians and the Anunnaki and people from the Sirius B star system, inclusive of the Draco reptilians who were master geneticists, they were involved in engineering, or at least re-engineering, tweaking, playing with the DNA of humans and humanoids in the earliest epochs of time on this planet, and they've probably been messing with us for a long time since then.
There's an even older story, I don't know if you've heard this one, about these what became those proto-humans was a group of high dimensional, like 11th or 10th dimensional, who were just kind of on an away mission. And they got caught in the gravity well of this planet, and the ship failed. Uh-huh. And just sat there for a few days in their time, but like 5,000 years in ours.
Right.
But this is 500 million years ago. And the story goes is that the location of this is what's known now as Bodh Gaya in India, which strangely enough is a place that has temples from all kind of different sects of Hinduism center on Bodh Gaya. And it was this enormous dome-shaped ship, maybe even a couple of miles across. But when they stepped out of it, they immediately stepped from this high dimension into the third dimension and from a light being down to a condensed being, and they were terribly traumatized, and very little was left of them if they at all survived. They were basically, well, obviously, if you're a 12-foot being, your crown chakra is up there, and you're 12 feet up in the sky, and if you're down there, you're not in touch with it, so you've lost your higher center. That's the way I see it. Anyway, so these beings just kind of mumbled their way through the rest of evolution until the reptilians came along and then started messing with them, which traumatized them further. So there's this whole history of whom humans are. And this must be this whole idea of the first ones and these immortal beings and these immortal souls that have been here forever.
Right.
So anyway, the name, sorry, I just want to say that the name of the woman who told this story is Eva Semenova, which means new seed. Yes, it's, sort of Eastern European, sort of Romania, Bulgaria, sort of area. One of those areas, where the Bulgs live, or the Rooms. So that's one of the stories, is that's where the humans come from. That is that we weren't even the creation of the reptilians, because the reptilians found something, and this something was this kind of what remained of these poor humans who had been heavily traumatized. Isn't that an interesting story? As we swap stories of space and time. And Tolek, are you still there? No, you're not. Am I still here? My buttons are clicking. Yes, hang on. I'm not sure. Am I? Can I hear myself on Studio B? Let me just check my studio. Oh, have I got a Studio B? No. What's that? Is that a studio? Yes, I've got Studio B here. Can I hear Studio B? Yeah, well, I'm still on Studio B, it seems, but I don't know where Tolek has gone to.
I did it.
There you are.
This microphone
is a switch.
It happens to have a switch on it, and I moved a little bit, and it was upside down, and I turned it over. I'm like, oh, little red light. My sincere apologies.
Meanwhile,
yes. Back on Earth.
Yeah, so Eva Semenova was the name of this lady.
Yes.
And she's very, very quietly spoken with a very heavy accent. Quite difficult to understand the story, but, you know, if you listen, I listen to it carefully, and there's a transcript. This is a Camelot production, so Gary Cassidy did a really good job of digging all this stuff out. Big thumbs up to good old Gary. So, meanwhile, so we got all these beings that have been messing about with us, batting us forwards and backwards, until we are who we are today. And so that's why we're kind of unique in that we were formed as a survivor of a terrible accident. Kind of thing.
Yeah. And part of that story that I understand is that they were kind of tricked. I'm like, come on, we'll give you an experience that you've never had before. You'll have form. And with this, with this human form, you can do kind of neat things and you can have experiences you've never had before. And they were kind of tricked into these bodies. And I'm like, oh yeah, we only live, back in those days, we only live for what? 37 to 38 years or 42 years or whatever. This is before the time of Gilgamesh and Noah and all the rest of those guys who were living 800, 900 years. But those early proto-humans, they made them so they were not at all what we are today. They were
disposable single-use items.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, a rubber glove.
Yeah, and they were like, "Well, we need some more, we'll make some new ones."
Mhm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not really that much of a consciousness of their own.
No, not like we are today.
Yeah. Cause, you know, you're saying, okay, so to bring your analogy. So there's the pizza slice of Super JP here in this body talking to, a pizza slice of, Super Tolek here.
Right.
Speaking to lots of pizza slices of, perhaps other pizza slices of themselves listening. Not necessarily knowing that they're listening to the same person. Is that likely?
Reminds me of that story. I was, I think about 3 weeks out of, 3 weeks removed from my departure from Tucson back in the winter of 2012. And I was staying with a buddy of mine and was walking the neighborhood. Decided to take a walk. I think it was on a Tuesday morning, actually. And I was barely out there, like 7 minutes or so, walking down the street. And I come upon this woman who's probably about 10 years my senior. We start having this conversation. And ultimately, you know, we have two souls that are meeting each other, we think, for the first time. And she proceeds to tell me a story about when she was taking a similar walk about 6 months earlier and met a man on a side street in a town having a similar kind of, you know, leisurely walk experience. They stopped, started talking to each other, and they found out within not too much time that she was the female expression, pizza slice, inhabiting and animating a human body, and he was the male expression, another pizza slice, of the same soul on planet at the same time. And these two people, this woman that I met and this man who she met, they were both about the same age. So they were on planet at the same time.
Now, did you meet both of them?
No, I just met her.
All right.
I met her on my walk.
I would have really loved to have met what they both felt like to stand next to them.
Yeah.
You know, what the vibes were, as it were.
And they really didn't look like each other at all. I mean, there was no physical resemblance. What came through was in their conversation about how they felt about life and how they each experienced life and how so many things were similar. And then the discussion got deeper and deeper and deeper, and they both kind of came to this aha moment of knowing. Pretty amazing. I'd never heard that before.
That must be beautiful. Must be very, from what I understand, when you meet people who are in your soul group, for instance, not necessarily, perhaps your soul group is the entire pizza, of which there are several pairs of slices, perhaps, or multiples, you know, triples of slices, you never know. Us humans and our gender definitions, you know, we're already found 31, you know, Baskin Robbins has got nothing on us. So,
my understanding, and it's, as much as I know, it's still hard for me to get my brain wrapped around this one. My understanding is that, yes, I'm here on this planet, inhabiting and animating this body in this lifetime. But I'm also, those other parts of me are simultaneously having other life experiences. Excuse me. I don't know if they're organic or not, but certainly in terms of higher dimensional experiences, I've been out there doing other things for a long, long time. So we truly are souls, you know, the super JP or the super Tolek is having this earthly human experience, but I am also simultaneously having other experiences all at wrong word because we don't have a word
I know
for it.
At the same time yeah,
yeah.
What
so we truly are multidimensional
yes
we're multidimensional
That's the thing, you know, your 3D body is doing one thing, your 4D body is doing another, your 5D body. But when you've really got it together, is there a point when you're all there all at the same time? Because I've heard people talking about that being all present, all the dimensional bodies are present in this time-space moment, if we can call it that.
I have clearly had the awareness of being out of this body a few times and being other places and including being out in space, you know, away from Earth, seeing Earth and watching certain things happen. I personally have never had the experience of feeling like I was part of all that is, that I was part of all of the great mystery, that I was part of creation, a creator. I've never had that experience. I have heard of people who claim that. I have no concept for what that's like. I navigating life on this planet is enough for me. But, you know, I would imagine what you're talking about is someone who is all-knowing, all-present, all dimensions, all space, all time. I'm not in this earth body, I'm not. But it might be one amazing experience.
Indeed, to be on the inside and on the outside at the same time, as David Byrne says. So,
yeah.
So meanwhile, Andromeda Council. Altairians. Do they constitute part of the Andromeda Council?
Altair. I've heard of it, but not in any discussions that I've been part of.
Mm-hmm. All right, now. Another. Okay, so I just love, you know, I just like, you know, who's who, what's what, because everybody's got their perspective, and of course, you know, I just like to share perspective until we all get a good focus through. Then, all right, so Lyra Vega, that was the original. Well, you know, the big stories say that the Lyrans were the first humans that arrived in this galaxy or in this universe from this other universe.
From this other galaxy.
Universe or something outside of this time space dominion thing, and that they were from a higher dimension who popped in. Or these were the Patal, you know, who came into this hologram. This, you know, they say this is a big old video game.
Yeah.
Wherever everything, the
founders, so to speak.
Yeah, the founders, these people, beings.
Yeah, Alex is a wealth of depth of information about the earliest formation of the universe and the solar system, which beings came into place. That hasn't been my area of interest.
All right. Okay, so here's another question for you.
So it's not something that I have a great depth of knowledge about.
Okay, all right. I will grill you on it. Yeah, I'll grill Alex next time I get a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
Cause I managed to slip some in, you know, because like, people ask these questions, and I'll add just a little supplement that kind of broadens it out and kind of answers some deeper questions,
sure.
If I can.
I can talk extensively about higher dimensional life, fifth dimensional life, the attributes of it, what they can do, what they don't have the ability to do.
How about timelines?
We are in a period of convergence,
yes,
of timelines, actually.
Now, there's a phenomenon, called the Mandela effect. Not the mandala effect, because the mandala is a yantra, I'm just seeing them exploded in my head. A mandala is a geometric representation of a kind of a spiritual domain placed onto a two-dimensional plate. Anyway, so long story. but the Mandela effect in the, that, some people remember Mandela, Nelson Mandela, as having died sometime in the 90s. And then he seemed to die last year. Likewise, who's that, that actor? I can never remember his name again. Very black hair, strong eyebrows. Not Charles Bronson. This other guy. It's a bit like Charles Bronson. Anyway, that sort of archetype. Various other people. It's called the Mandela effect. Have you heard of this? And what can you report on what your people have said about the timelines merging? And, what do we do about the Nazis who are on that other timeline that's merging with us? Any ideas? I know there's a lot of questions there, but I mean, you basically, if you want to weave your story about around those kind of points.
Sure. What I've been taught, what I've been essentially shown is that as we experience life on this planet, this currently 3D organic world, and we've had intrusions, if you will, and influences by other races, you know, not only the reptilians, but by others. I can tell you that categorically, one of the things that I've learned in the past 3 years is that where we are here today, June 27th of 2016, and I got this answer last year, so it's the context is good within a year. If we had not been messed with, interfered with, influenced by non-aligned, independent ETs coming to this planet doing their thing. Now, the reptilians have been here for a long, long time. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about other races. With all of the back engineering of technology, we are at a very unique place in the year 2016. We have iPods, iPads, notebooks, netbooks, laptops, and some amazing software that the everyday person doesn't use, but you know, the guys with three letters, they use all the time. If we had not been interfered with and not messed with, and if we had not had access to back-engineered alien technology, in the year 2015, and likewise in the year 2016, we would be at about 1975 or 1976, left to our own evolution. That's where we'd be. We wouldn't even be using a PC. That's how, because I was in school. I was back in school in those days. There were no computers. Well, there were no computers, not like.
Well, they were, but they were very clunky. No more than electric typewriters.
Yeah, I mean, it was let's see, Sperry, Univac, IBM.
IBM 365.
Right, you know, those, the big dogs.
Yeah.
I remember, never forget this, one of my earliest jobs out of university, I worked for a really small computer company up in the Northeast, Capital City, and it was actually called Capital Computer, and this gentleman, and he ran a small company, had sort of like, it was much like a combination of ADP. A payroll company and accounts receivables and a few other things that they provided these services. We walked down this hall. He opened the door to this room that was probably, let's call it 20 by 20 or 30 by 30. It was full of Sperry Univac machines with the tapes, you know, the film tapes that were going zip, 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 zip. And he proudly announced, "This machine can compute. It has 15K. I went, "Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow.
No.
15K. Who needs more than a megabyte? Who needs more than a megabyte of storage?
I mean, going read.
Yeah, who's going to type a million letters into a keypad?
My first top computer. So I had a tower on the floor and a monitor. Not a flat screen, a monitor sitting on my desk.
Oh, of course.
I was excited because it had a 40 megabyte hard disk. And I had a black screen with a menu. Could choose A, B, C, D. That was a GUI.
That was a GUI, man. That's what we call a graphical user interface.
The mouse showed up in 91 or 92. We would be at 1975 or 76 today without outside interference, which is astounding to think of. We'd be in Scotland, actually.
Mm-hmm. Islands. Yeah. We'd be hairy and wearing kilts and going, ouch, this kilt hurts.
I guess.
I tell you, Jewish people don't wear kilts. Let me tell you. All right. So meanwhile.
Oh, you want to tell me that story?
No, I just want to lay that one out there just to say.
Alrighty.
Meanwhile,
think about that. I happen to have a laptop. You know, you and I are having this conversation. I've got a microphone on a headset and I'm plugged into a computer, and I couldn't even conceive of this conversation back in college when I was paying, you know, $250 to $300 a month in phone, long distance phone bills because I was calling my girlfriend.
Yeah. In 1969, Stanley Kubrick released 2001 A Space Odyssey. And they had a telephone, a video telephone, the equivalent, really, of what we call Skype.
Yes.
And in about 2001, 2002, I think that was when we first started to use Skype and we first started to get webcams and things like that. And it was just about in tune with that level. But as you're saying, you know, these things have been pumped into our consciousness. They've been pumped into our universe, I believe, by the AI, so that we interface with it much, much more easily.
I remember
what's your transhumanist kind of thing as well?
Oh, sure. We'll talk about this. Last comment.
But tell you about when you were a kid.
1971. Dad was a Mickey Mouse and Disney fan. We had been to Disneyland as a family in 69, two summers before. And Disney World in Florida had opened, I think 71 or 72. And we went down there and I saw, among many things, Tomorrowland. And I'll never forget this carousel of an exhibit. It was called GE, World of Tomorrow, GE meaning General Electric. And one of the technologies that they showcased that we would be using in the future was your video phone. You can sit in the comfort of your home, and so they're showing this family and, you know, the audio animatronic dog, a little terrier going woof woof, and there's the family talking to grandma and grandpa on their TV. They're, hey, Graham, hey, grandpa, how you doing? Oh, good, you know, Graham's been making some food for us and our life is good over here. 1971, they were talking about the video phone. Here we are.
But there you go. So
Skype.
Skype.
People use cameras.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's...
And so when did we start to see it being ubiquitous across the web? 04, 05?
Mm-hmm. Well, not
10 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
So... The interesting thing is that the meetings that we're having right now, like this one, like the meetings that you're having off air with various other off-world representative stroke, incarnate stroke, accidentally got here a long time ago stroke, you know, Star Wars bar, Han Solos, who have all kind of, you know, the guys in the red shirts, who've all been on the away missions and died on the earth and, you know, never escaped. And so there's, you know, this makes up that kind of rather large percentage of people who have been here for a long time from other places. There is something that Andrew Bartz said to me. We were talking about Bartz in the chat room earlier. He said to me, it's about, the galactic star map. Like being able for people to, for their souls to go home after this. Do you have any intel on that?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Because I didn't address it, I want to address it. You asked about the transhumanist agenda. The very short summary for this issue is the words transhumanist agenda simply boil down to the fact that the few, for lack of better words, oligarchs in power, the powers that be, the powers that were, I call them the ones that operate in the dark and the shadows, they want to keep us monitored, managed, used, manipulated for as long as possible in a 3D organic form. Now, even if we're half organic and part technology, like in the Star Trek universe, the Borg, you have computer parts, you have eye parts, you have appendages, all this stuff, you're still an organic human. The transhumanist agenda is to keep us as organic humans as possible, because as long as they can do that, they have control over us, because we can be manipulated through a variety of events because of what happens when humans feel fear. It's all about the transhumanist agenda. It's about keeping us as organic humans so that we continue to be manipulated and abused. Your question about, is it like generally about time and coming here? And
a lot of people feel like they've been dumped
like
on this planet.
This is the last. Yeah.
And they want to go home.
My understanding is I've been coming here for 75,000 years. I've told this story many times, so to keep it brief. In whether you call it mid-level 4D or mid-level 5D time, essentially it's the same in terms of, I gotta create a word that's not time. But in any case, and I asked this recently, and it's worth restating because it helps people to understand why it's so different for them. I've been coming here for 75,000 years as a soul, incarnating in a variety of human bodies. They kind of feel like I've been gone on a year and a half business trip. So if you round those numbers up, somebody who's been coming to this planet for 100,000 years, which is most, that 70% of the souls that I was talking about, the star seeds that are on this world, most of them coming here for 100,000 years. For their higher dimensional family members, they've been gone for about 2 years. For us down here, we're going, get us off this rock. I'm sick of coming here. This is a beautiful planet, but people are nuts. You know, they connive, they cheat, they lie, they steal, they beat each other, they take advantage of each other, they murder each other, on and on and on. It's a beautiful planet, but what people do to each other is horrific. So get me off this rock. And our higher dimensional brethren going, you signed up for this deal, you signed up to come down and have these experiences, you know, what's the deal? You've only been gone for 2 years.
It sucks! It sucks!
That's right!
It sucks!
The reptilians, God bless them, they gave us money. Bastards.
Yeah.
Like Alex says, let me get this straight, or at least more, I guess Mornay,
mm-hmm.
It's passed on by Alex, said, you've got to pay to live on your own planet? We don't get it. That doesn't make any sense
to us
at all.
Yeah, that doesn't compute.
Yeah.
So,
they don't use money. No. There's no need for money.
No.
If you, as a higher dimensional human, if you need something, you go, I want one of these. You manifest it.
That's right.
Or use some technology that's on the ship and you create whatever you want to.
So here's the thing, Tilek. Because this,
yes.
You know, we're coming to towards the end. And this is the important bit, right? From what I can understand, the defeat of all the bad guys depends on us. And there's this special quality about us, la-da-da-da-da. You know, Jesus said these things, Jesus alluded to these things, all the ETs allude to these ideas that they don't want to say it outright. Well, I'm going to say it outright. I believe that humans, when we evolve, will be able to potentially in small groups, and certainly in really large groups, manifest a lot more changes than throwing a weasel at CERN. if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Do you get my drift on that?
Yeah, I do.
In order to defeat the things, we evolve into the beings who can manifest in the fourth dimension like that, as you say.
Right.
That's my thought, anyway. I don't know if that's the way.
This may not be a popular notion, but I'm going to go here anyway. Ultimately, it's just the evolutionary, at least based on what I've been told. I'm a student and I'm a teacher. So the moments that I'm a student, I ask questions, I listen, I ask questions, I ask more questions. As a student, and now as a teacher, based on what I've been told, it is the evolutionary blueprint of this planet to evolve. And we're talking within a relative few years that it will complete this current time frame of transition and transform, become a higher dimensional world. When that happens, the lower vibrational life forms, like psychopaths and people who are liars and cheats and murderers and any of those ilk, including any of the reptilians that are here, they will not survive the transformational shift, because at the first, like once the shift happens, immediately we're going to be like 4.4, 4.5. Mid-level, we'll be mid-level, a mid-level fine essence matter, spirit essence, higher dimensional world. Because these people, these bad people and these bad reptilians, their natural vibratory level is lower than that, they're not going to survive on this world. So there's no need to defeat anything. What will happen is that the people who aren't ready to evolve, they'll go other places. They'll choose to go and live other 3D lives on other third dimensional organic worlds. And the people that want to become higher dimensional humans, they'll stay here. And they'll be part of that change. Will the reptilians and the bad guys ultimately be defeated? Yes, there'll be some more battles and skirmishes, and the remaining reptilians will lose control, lose power, etc. But ultimately, it's a foregone conclusion, because they won't survive. Their natural vibratory rate won't survive the transformational shift of this world. And the people who want to live as higher dimensional humans will. Some people are going to need some psychological and emotional, I'm going to speak metaphorically, hand-holding. They're going to need some help understanding what this new life is all about, what it's like to live as a higher dimensional human. Because one minute they'll be, let's say that they're uninformed and they don't listen to Super Guy JP or any of the other radio shows, and they're just going about their lives and they're good people. They wake up, kind of like next moment they're going, where'd my clothes go? Where's my house? Why am I 7 feet tall? What just happened? All those people, they're going to need some help.
And some underwear.
Yes, that's right.
extra large. And so we're all looking at some kind of transformation. And I really do believe that, it's like, when the werewolf starts to transform first, he like gets a twitching eyebrow or something like that. And suddenly a little hair jags out of his forehead and he starts growing a whisker or something like that.
Little nose gets longer. And
yes. Little things happen. I mean, if you were to take it and make it really fast, it would all happen at once. But, things happen one by one. Click, 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 click. The different things have a different time frame.
It is progressive.
Yes.
And for some people, more things are happening quicker than others.
Yes. There's a word my guides uses, accretions. which is like one layer upon another. So when, and I used to, what the hell are you talking about? You know, cause I said, when was this going to happen? And when was that going to happen? And I said, you know, when the correct accretions. No,
that's right.
And,
as I've said to many people, yeah. It is not when, it's what.
Yeah. It's like when the correct accretions have happened. Now, right. if you can understand what that means, is an accretion is like a layer. You dip your candle into wax. Into hot wax, and some comes off and dries and hardens and makes another layer, and that's an accretion, you know. And so the right size of thing has to fit the right size of thing, and until everything's accreted to the right size, they won't fit right, will they?
Right. Or maybe another analogy could easily be when the right number of puzzle pieces start fitting together. Mm. That's another metaphor. There are a whole variety of metaphors, but it is progressive, without a doubt. Mm. But there, based on what I've been taught, there will be a moment. Some people call it the event. Some people call it the shift. I call it the moment of transformation. Mm-hmm. Based on what I've been taught, there will be a moment when we cease to be organic humans. We would actually see a disbursement. We would see what used to be, skin, hair, blood, bones, all this stuff, we'll see basically like baby powder. And the higher dimensional human will emerge. You'll see your original form, whatever you choose to look like actually. Fourth dimensional people can choose to look whatever. They can look female, they can look blonde, they can look brunette, they can look short, tall, whatever they want.
Mm. Oh God, does that mean I can lose this figure? Oh, thank God for that.
Yeah, you can, yeah, whatever.
Grow some hair. I mean, I tell you, this whole hair thing has really pissed me off. This, like, you know, people have bad hair days. Yeah?
Yeah.
This is a bad hair lifetime. Let me just
follically challenge. Yes,
this has been a really crazy. I just basically had to get here. Okay, yeah. Anyway, thank you so much, Tolek. It's been a real blast. We've been blasting through the Galactic Center. www.andromedacouncil.com.net
and www.transformationalshiftevents.com.
Conference. Oh yeah, the conference. We didn't even go there. All right, thanks a lot, mate. We'll speak soon. Thank you.
Take care. Thank you.